The Athletic.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James and welcome to the show, brought to you by The Athletic UK. And on today's podcast, we're going to be saying hola to Marco Silva, who was appointed as Fulham manager on a three-year deal on Thursday evening. So our instant reaction to the new chapter at Craven Cottage under Marco Silva and Louis Boa-Morte. Welcome home, Boa. It's very, very exciting. And here to discuss all the ramifications and what we can expect from Marco Silva's tenure at Fulham is Fulham's writer for The Athletic, Peter Rutzler.
Hey, Sammy. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. And from the other side of the journalism world, Izzy Barker. How are you doing, Izzy?
Hola, Sammy. How are you?
Hola, indeed.
Before we start, can we just point out that Sammy's been trying to, you know, enforce his influence and sway by kicking both Izzy and myself out of this podcast while trying to put it together so far?
I'm very much the Switzerland in this Athletic versus the Sun journalism war today. And as we saw last week, Switzerland are quite good now. So come on, the Swiss. Okay, just before we start, just to say that if you want to read the latest on Marco Silva's appointment at Fulham, do make sure you're subscribed to The Athletic by going to theathletic.com/Fulham pod. Peter has done a long read all about the appointment on there and, of course, the return of Louis Boa to SW6. Peter, I'll start with you. You were quick to break this news, I think, on Wednesday evening that it was Marco Silva that Fulham were going for. There'd been lots of rumours about Chris Wilder. I'd heard some mumblings about Eddie Howe as well. And of course, there were kind of the people that we knew about-ish, like Steve Cooper, Javi Pereira. But it was quite clear on Wednesday that a deal had been agreed and it was just a matter of when, not if.
Yeah, my understanding is that Marco Silva was Fulham's first choice. It's been an interesting sort of process because, as you say, there has been those rumours. Both Chris Wilder and Steve Cooper were under consideration by Fulham. Eddie Howe too, but Eddie Howe wasn't interested in the job, is my understanding of it. But there was always this sense. So there was obviously Cooper and there was Wilder. They were the favourites with the bookies as well. I mean, we mentioned them on the last podcast too, but whenever I was trying to have conversations with people, there was always the sense that there's someone else. There's someone else that isn't currently in discussion, really. It hasn't really been reported on. And there was a real determination to sort of keep it under wraps, perhaps almost, you know, to hide the fact, you know, in case those talks didn't work out and how that could temper expectations and things like that. But no, Silva was the man that Fulham wanted, and yeah, it was provisionally agreed this week, and then it was announced the next day. He's only, I think he was on his way back from Portugal, so he'll have to quarantine for a few days. So that will hold up his first sort of training sessions at Motspur Park. But he'll be doing some work remotely, and I imagine that will mean Stuart Gray will continue. But no, it's exciting. Obviously, Louis Boa-Morte is coming in as well as his assistant. He's bringing his Everton staff back together. And that includes Bruno Mendes as his head of performance. He was responsible for the Benfica Lab, which is sort of an innovative data-based approach to monitoring fitness levels. Obviously, Alistair Harris has left the club. He followed Scott Parker to Bournemouth. Also coming with Silva is Gonçalo Pedro as first team coach, Hugo Oliveira as goalkeeper coach, and Antonis Limanakis, first team analyst who we first met at Olympiacos, as well as Boa-Morte too. So the team's in place. It's now about getting down to business as pre-season's already underway, and you know the season's not too far off either.
Yeah. Izzy, your first reaction when you saw the news about Marco Silva looking like he was heading to Craven Cottage, were you pleased, underwhelmed? There's been a bit of a mixed reaction in the fan base.
Yeah, definitely. It does feel like there's a bit of a kind of divided reaction among the fans. I've got to be honest, I was a little bit underwhelmed, but from seeing Peter's report, I kind of knew, okay, this is this is our man, because like Peter was saying, it did feel like there was always someone else. It kind of felt like all the names that were mentioned were either backup options or they didn't want the job. So I think I kind of had to come to terms with the reality of it. Obviously, I was a bit underwhelmed because I kind of thought of his track record in England. But that's not to say it's kind of a new era. It is someone completely different, completely different style. And the fact that he'd, I think, I don't know if this is confirmed, but had he rejected the Fenerbahce job and he for Fulham? So it's obviously like he wanted to create, it's exciting to know what he wants to create at Fulham and his ambitions with the club. So I think I've kind of warmed over time to it. I don't know about you, Sammy.
Yeah, I think I'm exactly the same as you, Izzy. When I saw it, I was thinking like, okay. But then when you dive deeper into it, I think it, the more and more I think about it, it does make sense. He's got experience of taking a team up from a second tier to the top tier with Estoril in Portugal. And his time in England was checkered, but with some really great fleeting moments. And it has a bit of the Roy Hodgson's about it. Someone who's coming to Fulham with a bit of a damaged reputation, but clearly the makings of something good. And what I'm hoping is that he and Fulham are in the same place where actually one needs the other just as much. Fulham obviously need Marco Silva to do well because we need to get promotion back to the Premier League for all sorts of reasons. But Marco Silva needs a club where he's at for more than one season, where he has a bit of a chance to make his name and re-establish his credentials in England. You know, you look at the likes of David Moyes, who 2 seasons ago was a laughing stock. Once again, you know, kind of an Everton connection there. And now he's done a great job with West Ham and is seen as, again, one of kind of England's premier managers. It doesn't take long for reputations to be re-established. I imagine, Peter, that will be Marco's aim here. I don't know what your thoughts are on kind of this, some of the negativity that's surrounding him. A lot of it is around kind of his slightly disloyal way he left Watford.
Yeah, it's definitely the Watford thing is overshadowed him a bit, but I do agree. He's definitely got a point to prove. And I think his time in England has been quite a strange one. You know, I mean, not just in England, but for his career in general, he's not stayed at a club for more than, what, 2 seasons or for 2 seasons since his first club at Estoril, as you pointed out. So he's got to show now really why there was such an aura around him. I remember when he first came to England and he took over at Hull City, and it does seem a long time ago now, but he did have quite a strong impact there. They were a bit of a mess coming into Christmas time. I think they were under Mike Phelan, if I remember rightly. And he then came in and completely transformed them. I think they won 8 games towards the back end of the season, but it wasn't enough to keep them up. So obviously that was a relegation. Then went to Watford, started superbly well. And then there was the whole Everton thing where Everton quite clearly saw him and wanted him. And it turned his head, evidently. And that's what Watford claimed in anyway in their statement once they'd sacked him. So he never really had a long spell at Watford. And then, of course, at Everton, his first season was okay, wasn't particularly great. I think he was 5 points worse off than what Ancelotti managed last year.
That season that he had was classically Everton, 8th place and out in the 4th round of the cup. So, I mean, he just managed expectations, didn't
he? Did like, his job,
Everton,
didn't he?
He won the Everton Cup.
And then of course the way it ended at Everton with the team in the bottom three was not particularly exciting. But I guess the fact that he's moved on every time, he's always seemed to have moved upwards. Maybe the exception you could say was with his move from Sporting to Olympiacos, but that seemed a very strange departure. I think Sporting dismissed him on the basis of just cause. And there were reports of him not wearing a club suit to an event that was used as justification. I don't know how valid that is, but those were the reports at the time, which is all very strange. But he'd won the Portuguese Cup with them, went to Olympiacos, won the league. And then, of course, went from Hull to Watford to Everton, which is stepping up. And I think since he's been out of management, he's been out for what, 18 months now, a lot of clubs have sort of just presumed he would not step down to the Championship. In the piece today, we talk about Nottingham Forest, so they're owned by Evangelos Marinakis, who, of course, is the Olympiacos owner as well. Silva left Olympiacos on really good terms. But Forest, while they considered him and saw him sort of as quite an ideal appointment, really, it was never thought that he would step down. When he was at Hull, of course, Hull desperately wanted to keep him, but he was very, very ambitious. Now, Fulham have clearly been persuasive and managed to get him to come down to the second tier. I think it's not a surprise. I think Fulham are in such a strong position, as we talked about, in terms of squad resources to go back up in what is going to be a weakened championship this year, financially anyway. So if he wants to get back into the Premier League, it's a good basis. And as you say, it's sort of a move that suits different parties. And the fact that he does have a point to prove can only be encouraging. And you know, that bodes well for the season ahead. And not to mention too his style of play, which should be encouraging, particularly after all the criticisms that Scott Parker has had during his tenure.
Yeah, Izzy, we've watched 38 games of pretty turgid football last season, at times effective. And I'd have taken it if it got us to 17th, but it didn't. So ultimately, you have to be judged on the results. But what we saw wasn't very pretty. If we get even a little fraction of what Marco Silva was able to create, particularly at Watford in the Championship, it could be a really exciting season. We might lose a few games 4-3 because it might all just be mental. We might be conceding goals from set pieces for fun, but a bit of excitement, particularly with fans back in the ground, can't be a bad thing. I know it's all about promotion as well, but that's exciting. I'm excited that I've renewed my season ticket and I'm going to be back in the Hammersmith End next season watching, hopefully, Marco Silva and his team tear it up.
Yeah, I think Fulham needs to get a bit of its sexiness back that we've been used to before. Yes. And we just didn't have at the end of Scott Parker's reign. But yeah, I'm excited particularly with Silva's tactics. I guess largely it can be described as primarily very attacking, you know, relying on dribbling, ability, pace and creativity kind of to create chances. And we might see him getting the best out of the likes of maybe Cavallero and players like that that haven't shone so much under Scott Parker, who couldn't get the best out of players like that. Maybe he'll go back to his Wolves form, but I think it's really exciting. And, you know, his teams don't display any kind of remarkable characteristics in their style of play, like teams managed by Pep or Sarri, and they can often struggle to keep hold of the ball, but it will be exciting. And I think, like you say, with fans back in the cottage, it'll give us something to maybe smile about again. And I'm kind of bored of the whole benchmark being like, oh, let's achieve promotion. Maybe let's reclaim a bit of the sexiness that Fulham has had. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. An exciting kind of new era.
Are you saying he's the new Justin Timberlake of Fulham? He's bringing sexy back?
I might be saying that right here, right now. First time on the pod, you heard it here.
Peter's resigned from the Athletic effective immediately.
It's just dreadful, Sammy. That's a low one for you.
I mean, one thing that will be a big challenge for Marco Izzy is Alexander Mitrovic. You reported about the bid that Fulham had from Dynamo Moscow, 16 million that was turned down earlier in the summer. Your colleague Tom Barkley tweeted saying that Marco Silva's a big fan of Mitrovic. I don't know where Tom got this. Is it from the horse's mouth? But that's a good sign if he is a big fan of Mitrovic.
Yeah, 100%. I think Mitro is a player that needs to be loved. He needs attention. You know, he wants that, and he wants to kind of be back to enjoying himself at Fulham again. It's no secret that obviously under Scott, you know, there were tensions kind of bubbling for the whole of last season, really. You know, he wasn't being played, and that loyalty kind of wasn't shown back to him, considering, you know, he was the Championship Golden Boot winner. So I think if you can have Alexander Mitrovic, you know, hitting the net and on form in the Championship, then you're going to get promotion shortly. I think he's a key cog to us. He's been a key cog to both our promotions. So that's a really, really good sign. And I think it's a really difficult one in terms of people are saying, oh, is Mitrovic going to stay? He's on holiday, etc. But I think it's been quite difficult. He did want out if Scott Parker was staying. But I think it's been quite difficult in terms of him actually getting a move. He really likes London. He wanted to stay in the London area. There was talks about West Ham, but it just doesn't seem that likely that a move would happen. So I think he wants to be enjoying Fulham. He loves living in London with his family. So if that relationship is good, then that's great for the club. And yeah, really exciting.
It would be an immediate vote winner, wouldn't it, for Silva to come in and then manage to get Mitrovic back on side, particularly after the last year, as Izzy's been outlining. And I think he's the kind of forward that Silva would want. You know, just looking back over his time in England anyway, I think at Everton he had Cenk Tosun up front, who he liked to use as sort of a disruptive forward. Troy Deeney at Watford. And then, of course, I think he had Umar Nias. I think he took on loan at Hull City. I may be wrong there. But either way, that just showed that he is interested in a forward who can be disruptive, who can play to sort of Mitrovic's strengths and then use wingers bouncing off him. So that'll be really encouraging. Now, it just depends on where Mitrovic is. You know, I think Izzy's right. I mean, he's got a good deal at Fulham. You know, he's in London, which is great. At the same time, though, does he want another season in the Championship? So it's not. I don't think it'll be a straightforward process for Silva to win him over. But if he can, I mean, that's a massive boost. And you know, Mitrovic in himself, I think Fulham know this. You know, he is a ticket to promotion. The goals he can give, what he can offer teams, he can bully defenses, especially at this level. I think we can all agree that he's probably a cut above this level. Whether that's, you know, whatever sort of style you play, you can certainly do it at top level, as he's shown internationally. So yeah, that's his. That's also got to be his number one. Thing on his in tray, isn't it, really, to sort out Mitrovic's future? Because if he's not going to stay and if he can't persuade him, then he's got to get a replacement in and work with Tony Khan and the recruitment team.
Yeah, it'll be a big challenge as well. That there's other players on the books, Peter, that will certainly be looked at. We might be feeling like, oh, we're getting away with it, because clearly the Euros has a massive effect on transfers. Even though the window is open, not much will happen probably until the final, particularly if England go far, you'd expect. But Harrison Reed, Tosin Adebayo, both going to be under huge pressure, and we'll have definitely offers to move away from Fulham. And again, that's going to be something for Marco to deal with and try and win them round.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about some of those players and the interest they're going to garner. Like, you know, Tosin's for one. Harrison Reed, I'm sure, would have interest in him. But there's a real basis there for a good team. And if you can make that case and say, look, this is what I want to bring. You know, I myself am a Premier League manager. I don't particularly want to be in this division, and I know you don't either. That's a good sort of way to bring players on side. The other side, of course, is trying to work out who goes. You know, there have been players who've gone out on loan and players come back. Neskin Skabano, Stefan Johansson. Trying to work out who fits in where and then moving them on. So there's a lot of big decisions that need to happen in these coming days, especially to try and formulate the squad he wants. And then also the players he'll want to bring in. I think we've seen, you know, that the likes of Cavallero, Knockhart, even last year at Forest 2, haven't really shown their value, especially for the fees they were brought in for. So whether he can get the best out of them, or indeed will need some recruits to help him achieve promotion and his targets, that will need to be decided very, very quickly.
I mean, it's interesting, Izzy, seeing the training pictures and there's a few forgotten faces there suddenly at Motspur Park. I mean, yes, the likes of Knockhart and Christian Cabano, but like Jean-Michel Seri just lurking in one of those pictures. Like the man, he's had the weirdest 3 years in England that he's still in London. Is it a complete clean slate? Because Parker wasn't really a clean slate, because he kind of was there under Jokanović and under Ranieri. Is this a complete, you know, we might suddenly get the best out of players like Seri and Knockhart have been derided and almost kind of cast away by the fans?
Yeah, I think it's exactly that. I think there's this argument that if Scott had have stayed, he'd have had to go back to some of those players like Johansson and those sorts of players, Knockhart, saying, oh, can you now play for me in the Championship? Because I'd heard that a few players were quite upset with Scott and angry at the fact that he had kind of promised them this dream that they would be playing Premier League football when they got promoted most recently. And then obviously he didn't, fair enough. You know, we had amazing loan players, but he didn't kind of give that loyalty back to some of the players that got them promoted, maybe like Neskin Skabano. And so they were probably quite angry with Scott because of that. So would Scott have got the best out of those old faces? I don't think he would have. I think they've kind of become a bit disillusionized under him. A clean slate, I think, is a good thing for some of those faces. It's so bizarre seeing like Stefan Johansson with long hair. And I'm like, God, have you been away for that long? But yeah. And I think it is good, because otherwise, I don't know, I just don't feel like we would have got the best out of some of those old faces. That it's like Groundhog Day. I feel like every time we get relegated, we go back to these old players. But they've shown that they can do a job for us, like Cabano, like Johansson. So no, I think it's a good thing to have a new manager with them.
Yeah, interesting. Well, look, maybe it is the glorious moment for Jean-Michel Seri at a Fulham shirt. Who knows? All right, we're going to take a quick break. Loads of questions coming through, so we're going to get to those next. Part two of the Fulhamish podcast. I'm joined by Peter Rutzler.
Hello, hello.
And Isabel Barker.
Hello.
Post bag bulging today. Had to carry it up the stairs. It was very, very heavy indeed. So let's delve into it now. First question from Matt Wall says, is there anything to read into the fact that all the messaging has been from Shahid and not from Tony? Peter Rutzler, is Tony stepping back? And related, is Pereira coming back? The rumours have been flying around, Peter. Do we know anything?
I'm not sure if there's anything to read into Shahid Khan's comments and being all over the appointment. I think he's always done that. That's always been his sort of domain. In terms of Tony Khan, it's not something I'm aware of. We've talked about that Fulham are looking for a new director of scouting. As far as I'm aware, that's still ongoing. They have been speaking to candidates. I do know that. In terms of Tony's position, I don't think much has changed. I think we've talked about what the structure is at Fulham. Tony is sort of responsible for the analytical side of recruitment. He has a veto. It's his final say. It's his team. He doesn't just do it by himself. But then they are bringing in a director of scouting who'll be there on the ground full time because obviously he has other commitments. So having someone there who the manager can speak to on a daily basis, we'll sort of delegate that role a little bit more. And of course, there's also Alistair McIntosh, who's chief executive and deals with the financial side of things, was very much involved in the recruitment process for Fulham's new manager. And then of course the head coach, which is now Marco Silva, and he won't be unfamiliar with a setup like Fulham's in terms of a director of football and that sort of setup, but also the ownership too. He got on very, very well, as I mentioned before, with Evangelos Marinakis at Olympiakos. Similar reports about his relationship with the Alums at Hull City. So that does bode well in that sense as well. So, in terms of Javier Pereira, that's not something I'm aware of. I know there's been a lot of rumours around, but I'm not saying it's not the case, but I don't have any information either way. I do know that they have been speaking to candidates for the director of scouting role there.
Yeah, indeed. From what I've heard as well, and there's been rumours going around on WhatsApp and everything, from what I know, which is not as much as Peter, but I just wouldn't believe everything you're hearing, and that I don't think you should equate Tony's recent silence on Twitter to mean that he's not involved. I would guess probably the opposite. Hard to know for sure. Not heard anything directly from the club or from him, but
what I would point out is when putting the piece together on Marco Silva, it was Tony Khan and his sort of recruitment team who sort of identified Silva as a prospective replacement for Scott Parker. You know, there's always due diligence going on in terms of the squad. If players are leave, there's having candidates in mind who can replace players. Same goes for the coaching staff. And I think once it became clear to the club that Bournemouth were making overtures to Parker and those conversations were being heard, the plans were put in motion, and Silva was the candidate identified that could best fit the club, both in terms of style of play and also his own personal ambition, is what came back.
Yeah. PRO asks Izzy, what's the leash length if we get off to a slow start? He's going to be under pressure from day one. It's quite a comfortable start, really. Middlesbrough, Hull, Stoke, Millwall, Huddersfield, not exactly a start to instantly terrify you. Part of me thinks if he doesn't get 10 points out of those first 15, he's already going to be under pressure.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a really, really tense time for fans. I think fans are quite angry. I think there was a lot of kind of expectation, and we should have, hindsight is a great thing, but like arguably with the players that we had, obviously we should have stayed up, and Scott's left us. And I think fans are pissed off, and rightly so. Like, we have just bounced back to the Championship. A lot of tension is directed at Tony Khan. So if we're not getting results in the Championship, I think there's going to be uproar. I think fans are going to be more pissed off than we've seen them in a long time. And I think I think our club has to be ruthless if he's not getting results, because he's not proved himself in England. And if he can't prove himself in the Championship with one of the better squads and arguably more money than a lot of the clubs in the Championship, then I think the board and the club have to be ruthless for the fans' sake.
Yeah, I think he'll be given some time. Naturally, he's a new manager, but I think any time outside the top six will be uncomfortable for Marco, both from the fans and definitely from the ownership. They are not messing around this season. I don't even think they want playoffs this time, do they, Peter? They want top two. And given the way that the Championship's unfolded in the last couple of seasons and the weakness of the league last year, like, there just won't be any substitute for second best, I don't think, this time around.
No, I think, you know, you look, as you said, you look at the Fulham squad and you look at their sort of position with parachute payments and everything else relative to the division. You know, Fulham really should be competing for automatics. There's no getting away from that. And, you know, any time outside the playoffs, I think that's dangerous territory for Marco Silva. Obviously, you know, with the start of the season, it's always up in the air. But, you know, That's the target. I think Silva himself knows that. He doesn't want to be in the Championship either. And you do look at the fixtures, it is quite a soft landing for the first couple of months, really. It's difficult to judge who will be a threat, which of those clubs that have been in the division for a little longer have managed to put themselves in a position to compete, particularly in the playoffs. But in terms of the bigger sides, you know, West Brom, Sheffield United, Bournemouth too, because of their sort of finances. You look at those first few fixtures and you think it's a good opportunity, maybe is the best way of putting it. It's a really good opportunity to lay down a marker. I mean, Silva's come in and I guess it feels like a lot of time has been lost, and a lot of time has been lost. You know, planning's not gone the way you think Fulham would have wanted in terms of pre-season. Of course it hasn't. But, you know, pre-season only started Monday. It's not as though that Silva doesn't have a pre-season here to work with his players. It's not like last summer, which was ridiculously short. It's about now getting down to the nuts and bolts of it and putting in place and implementing the style. I think he's a very hands-on coach, and I think the players will... I think it will be quite interesting because he's known for going over really minor details. I think there was a story at Hull City about him banning apple crumble or something like that to get player fats down. So, you know, he's going to be all over so many different aspects. And I mentioned Bruno Mendes and the Benfica lab. You know, that's the kind of detail. You know, that's I think there was a piece done on The Athletic by Paddy Boylan and Greg O'Keefe, our Everton reporters, during Silva's time there. And it was about Mendes and the Benfica lab and how, you know, they would take players' bloods to try and assess where they are at and how focused they are on getting on managing player loads, which will be so important this coming season. So, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see the kind of impact he has and how the players take to him. He's had a lot of positive references that came back in the recruitment process, but also when you hear some past players speak about him. Had a big influence on Andy Robertson and Harry Maguire as well at Hull City, by all accounts. So really interesting time. And I think these coming weeks, when he first, you know, steps onto the training ground and introduces himself to players, will be important. And let's not underestimate the value of having Boamorte around the club too, particularly considering how sort of tense it's been in these last few weeks, how uncomfortable it's been. Having someone there who knows the club's values, and someone who the fans can really, really buy into, I think that really does make a difference.
Yeah, I mean, Boa's huge. It's just even from like a comforting blanket for the fans. You know, there was a debate whether Parker's a legend. Boamorte is a Fulham legend. There is absolutely no doubt about that. One for you, Peter, although I would suspect this is one that you might say to me, come back to me once I've done a bit more research. But apt again, given who our first opponents are, Neil Warnock, Middlesbrough at home. Are the concerns about set piece defence overblown? Will Stuart Gray stay on with the staff? I imagine part two you could probably answer quite quickly. Part one, as I say, you maybe need to delve a bit into it, but it's certainly a concern with Marco Silva, isn't it?
I can't answer either very quickly, Sammy. Sorry about that. it's definitely one I want to dig into a little bit more. And I'll be doing some. You know, there's lots to dig into with Marco Silva about how his time's gone at Watford, at Everton and Hull. And, you know, at the moment, it's just been cursory reading, just trying to assess what he's like, what his style of play is like, what he's like as a coach. And, you know, I've hinted at a couple of details there, but I'll try and piece that all together in the coming weeks. So, but his set pieces is definitely something that stands out. I remember it from his time at Everton. I mean, he was almost ridiculed for it, I think. And I think that's been a common denominator. So I imagine he will have learned from that. I mean, he's had 18 months out to assess why that's not necessarily worked in England. I don't know whether that was the case with his teams in Portugal and then in Greece. It could be to do with the players and just not used to that kind of system here. So it'd be interesting to see what's changed in that regard. In terms of Stuart Gray, as mentioned at the start, I mean, Silva's not here yet, so I presume he'll continue with preseason. I've not had an indication that Stuart Gray is leaving. I think the staff that have already left and gone with Scott Parker are the ones that have gone. But we'll see. I think Nathan Gardner is another one. He was a recruit by Scott Parker last October. So it'll be interesting to see what his position is. But yeah, once I get a clearer picture, I can answer that question. But for now, I'm not sure.
Izzy, Thomas Ryland Jenkins asks, silly question. I've seen some dapper images of Marco Silva. He seems to prefer the all black look compared to Parker's blues grays and yes, that white jacket. Who do you feel is the better dressed, Parker or Silva? We're located in Southwest London, so appearance is part of fitting in. Yeah, you've gone for the really important questions there, Thomas. But Izzy, any opinion on... I mean, a lot of people keep telling me that Marco Silva does look a lot like Colin Farrell and I can't quite get it out of my head now.
I love that question. I love how you directed like the important meaty questions to Peter and the fashion one to me, because I feel like it's very Sun-esque. But I love that. I feel like we always have to kind of have a bit of a trendy manager. Like for me, Slav was always the best dressed. I think Marco Silva was way better dressed than Scott. Ever since that blooming, what was it? That kind of, was it a gilet blazer thing that Scott wore in the Liverpool game? I think for me, his dress sense just went down from there. But no, Marco Silva for the win for me. I think if he's in a sharp black suit, he'll be looking good for sure.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Would you like a more
No. I love that. And I love the reference to Apple Crumble. That, like, I'm still just thinking about that. So no. That's a brilliant question.
Apple Crumble is rubbish, though. I think that is a good decision to get that banned.
That's what I was thinking about. I was like, why did he choose Apple Crumble? Was it like a big thing in the area or what?
I think it was a tradition there at home. Oh. I think so.
Brilliant.
That and their weird lame tiger chant. I'll go to either this one though, Izzy. Final one, and one of the, you know, a lot of people asking, Connor West says, which player or players do you think will benefit most from Silva's appointment? And Magic Kingdom asks, is Hector going to go back to looking like peak Tony Adams now he's back in the Championship? Is there maybe a player or two that you expect to spring a surprise or be back in the side this year that wasn't featured last year at all?
Not necessarily one that wasn't featured, but I think I mentioned it previously. I do think Cav will do well under Silva. I think Silva kind of loves, well, he loves pace and work rate, you know, for his forwards and his wingers. But I just think he could get the best out of Cav during this spell. And I guess, I don't know, with our championship setup, I'm not sure there's a load of wingers that spring to mind. But I think with Silva's style, you know, those sort of players are going to do really well. Players already in the team, like Robinson as well. But I think that's going to be really exciting with this kind of attacking, creative style. Hector wasn't necessarily one that sprung to mind, but we'll see. And it's going to be exciting, this new kind of creative era under Silva.
Interesting, Peter, the timing of Decker Dover-Reed and Hector going out to the Gold Cup. That's going to disrupt their pre-seasons a bit, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Clearly, I mean, the timings of it, to see them go out to the States, presumably with some kind of exemption to travel to the United States. I don't know if that's possible at the moment, really. The group stages end on July 21st. I imagine that Jamaica, they've got a good squad, they'll probably make it through that. And the final's not till August the 2nd, whether they get that far, I'm not sure. But either way, that means a significant chunk of pre-season they'll miss. It will hold them back in terms of what they'll learn stylistically about Silva. But the flip side is, of course, it's good for their fitness. So, it will, I think, maybe it will hold them back. We'll just have to see. I'm sure Silva will be all over what they're up to overseas.
It's a bit of an odd time for a tournament. You've literally had a perfect month where you could have held an international tournament. like when the Copa America and the Euros are on. When should we schedule ours? Oh, I don't know. We'll do it a month afterwards when the domestic seasons start again. That makes total sense. All right, that'll do for part two. We'll be back in a second. Part three of the Fulhamish podcast, Sammy here with Peter and Izzy. On the other emergency podcast that we did the other day, Peter, we did a bit of Euros chat afterwards. So why not again? It's the quarterfinals this weekend, England, Ukraine. What are you expecting?
I'm expecting a win, mate. You know, well, nothing less. You know, we've won the tournament after beating Germany. So now it's just it's home straight, isn't it? No, yeah, it's quite exciting. I quite like Ukraine. I think there are... Shevchenko's got them playing in quite an interesting way. They're quite an attacking team. What have I made of England? I don't know. I was tentatively quite nervous when Southgate announced his lineup against Germany. I thought we were showing Germany too much reverence, but I stand down. How dare I even consider questioning Gareth Southgate's decision making? The man knows what he's doing. So in Gareth we trust.
Izzy, what did you make of Tuesday's match?
Yeah, I was the same. You know, I was like, why is he on? Get him off. And then it all just kind of fell into place and everything came into fruition. I thought it was so defensive and stodgy, but Gareth Southgate obviously knows what he's doing and I don't. So I think that's what it proved. But no, it was brilliant. I think are we the only team to not have conceded a goal in the tournament so far that's left?
I don't have that stat to hand, but we must
be.
Italy didn't concede in the group stages, but they then did concede to Austria in extra time.
Yeah, and technically they got that really close offside goal as well, ruled off. So they've technically kind of conceded twice. So I think that's such an achievement. Like, you're going to win games, right? I don't think I've been this confident. I feel like if we can't do it now, we won't ever do it, because we've got so much exciting young attacking talent who can get the best out of Sterling and Harry Kane. So no, I'm really confident. Though I do love Ukraine and I do love Shevchenko, so it's going to be a really exciting game.
Yeah, I think that I'm confident that we should make the final. I think, honestly, we have a great chance to reach the final. I think Denmark are no mugs, and I assume they'll get past the Czech Republic tonight. And that will be a really, really difficult game, but one that I think is winnable. But the final, I think, is a lottery. Like, I just think no matter who gets through, whether it's Belgium, Italy, Spain, maybe it's Switzerland, maybe it's the Swiss. I referenced them at the start of the show. Maybe they'll make it all the way to the final. Whoever you get, I think that's a total lottery. And, like, I actually think that would still be an achievement getting to the final, even if we didn't quite win. It would be such a long time until we did that. Any other tips for the quarterfinals? What other games are you going to be keeping a close eye on? Is it the Belgium-Italy one that stands out?
I quite like Spain. I feel like they play in a really enterprising, quite traditionally Spanish way, as we've become accustomed to. But I think they can cause teams problems as long as they don't pass the ball into their own net in every game, then they'll be fine. But I think, you know, in terms of Belgium, I think this is sort of with their golden generation, if that passes by without even a final, I mean, the regret they will feel will be extraordinary. I mean, for a country of that size to produce the talent that they have, you know, they're going to be without Hazard and De Bruyne potentially, aren't they, for the Italy game? So that's a huge game. That's a huge, huge game.
I think an interesting one, just slightly bringing it back to Fulham, is that, yeah, I've been really impressed with Roberto Martinez in the last couple of years with Belgium. I think what he did in the World Cup was hugely underrated. Yes, they lost in the semi-final, but they did also beat Brazil on the way to that semi-final as well. And I feel that they've really handled themselves well. The way he managed that Portugal game was impressive. And I guess the point I'm trying to get at here is, doesn't necessarily mean if you fail with Everton that you're a bad manager. It's a weird club to succeed at, isn't it? Because the expectations at Everton are high, but they don't really have the resources to get where they want. And as a result, they often end up 8th to 10th, and anything below that's a huge failure. I just maybe think that trying to judge a manager's success at Everton is extraordinarily difficult, and I don't think there's been anyone who's truly succeeded maybe since Moyes.
Are you saying basically that under Marco Silva we're going to be winning the championship and then winning the Premier League, Sammy, because you can't judge a manager on their time at Everton?
Basically, yes. I'm saying that get your tickets ready for the new camp in 22-23 is basically what I'm saying, Izzy. But look, we'll see what happens in the Euros this weekend. And exciting times for Fulham with Marco Silva finally appointed. And the saga over, guys. That's surely the biggest win here, Izzy. It's just finally we have some certainty. It feels like for nearly 2 months now, ever since the relegation, we've just not known what's going on, and it's nice finally to be looking forward rather than trying to worry about who's coming in or is Parker leaving or what's happening with the club and the structure, etc. We have some answers finally.
Yeah, like it's so exciting. Like I think as fans, like fans of the club, like you just get a bit, you just give up a bit when things like that are happening. When the Euros are on, you're like, oh, I just won't bother following my club, and it shouldn't be like that. But I feel like it really has pushed us to our limits, you know, this summer. And no, it's so nice to be thinking that yes, if people that have renewed season tickets, you know, what's Peter? I'm sure you've got some intel on this. What about the new stand? When can people go into it and sit in it?
So the last I heard on the new stand was, I don't think they're selling season tickets for it for this season. That won't be until next year. But I think there's a possibility at some point in the season that there'll be match day tickets available for it. But I'm not entirely sure on that. But that's something that will be looked into, and I guess it just depends on how well the final stages of development go. I don't think the official opening is now until next year. That was pushed back because of sort of the COVID delays and whatever else. But yeah, I don't think that, no season tickets, but I think it's possible at some point there could be some match day tickets.
Yeah.
And I guess most importantly is, when does the Infinity Pool?
That's what I was going to say.
And as Fulham's writer for The Athletic, will you get access?
Will you be sipping a pina colada or a porn star martini in the Infinity Pool with Dave, the local Fulham fan, or something?
Absolutely. I'm definitely going to pitch it anyway. Watch a game from the Infinity Pool. Yes. Yeah, definitely.
I don't
agree to it, but.
That's a great Athletic piece, actually. I watched Fulham from the Infinity Pool at Craven Cottage. That's a great Athletic piece.
They have one at the Jacksonville Jaguars, don't they? And I feel like everyone's really toned in like tiny G-string bikinis, and it's just not going to be the same at Fulham, is it? It's going to be like someone with a beer belly, like sat in the Infinity Pool. Oh, well, looking forward to it.
I mean, honestly, the pictures when that comes out of someone trying to watch a game from the Infinity Pool, I don't know if we'll ever live it down, to be perfectly honest. But we'll wait and see. Maybe it'll turn into the new hip thing, like, you know, watching like the Monaco Grand Prix from an Infinity Pool. Maybe it will be a similar experience. But anyway, thank you very much for listening today. I don't know when we'll do another podcast. Is there any other breaking news that we can discuss?
I hope not.
Well, hopefully we'll start getting onto a bit more of a regular schedule from here on in and looking at pre-season, etc. And
I've been speaking to you twice in a week, Sammy. That's more than enough for me. As I said before, it's above my pay grade, you know. I think I need a break.
You do need a break. You do need a break, Peter. Maybe you need to get into another Infinity Pool. I don't know where you can go in the UK to do that at the moment.
I don't think there are many in Wandsworth, so
you can go to that posh one in Vauxhall at the Embassy Gardens, you know, the one between the two skyscrapers.
Oh yeah.
Oh, is that the one that's been pictured a lot, hasn't it? Yeah. No, I'm not sure that appeals, mate.
Oh, okay, fair enough. All right, well, thank you very much for listening today, Peter. Thank you very much for being on.
No, thank you, Sammy. Thank you.
Pulling a shift this week, Peter. You're really slogging it.
Well, can't see Jack Collins in here, so.
No. You're doing the Lord's work. And Izzy, thank you for being on.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on, guys.
All right, we'll be back soon with some more breaking Fulham news, I'm sure. But until then, have a good week. Come on, England. Come on, you guys.